Jim Taylor back on the WMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Good to have you along. We have a guest in studio with us this morning. Brian Dennison's been coaching a while in the Mercer County and the former Aledo School District. And I know when you're involved in coaching Coach Dennison, we say good morning. And you haven't been up since 1 o'clock this morning, but that's when you got back. I know that when you've been coaching for a long time, I don't know if you ever get accustomed to long bus rides, but you had one last night. So thanks for coming in this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And yeah, it was a short turnaround from getting home from Bloomington at about 1:30 or about 1:45 this morning. So, but thanks for having me.
Well, I know, you know, I tell people when I've been in this job, there's a story kind of with everybody you meet. And how you learn the story or the stories is you have conversations with them. And I know, you know, local kid here, grew up at Westmer in 1986, went to North Central. And then your coaching pedigree is pretty interesting. Most people think that you know, kids in high school think, well, Coach Dennison's been at Mercer County High School forever. But your resume coaching wise, I think, has always been pretty interesting. A young guy coached in the Western Big Six as a head coach at Galesburg, right? I think you were 27 or 28, something like that. Coached down in Georgia, some elite athletes down there. So, mm-hmm. So let's first talk a little bit about, I think, your interesting coaching resume. So, 86 graduate of Westmer, I think 90 graduate of North Central. Just kind of take mm-hmm. us through your resume coaching wise.
Yeah, you know, upon graduation from North Central College, you know, I was doing what everybody does during the spring and, excuse me, doing my student teaching and looking for jobs, and had a interview for basically what would now be a grad assistance position down at McMurray College in Jacksonville, and they called my head coach at North Central for a reference, and he called me in and said, "Are you interested in coaching college football?" I said, "Well, of course, yeah, absolutely." And he said, "Well, I think we're going to create a new position here." So that was extremely fortunate, you know, because at that time and still now, I mean, North Central College was a great place. Love it. And, you know, it was very good to me. And the people that are still there are very appreciative to them. And we're there for 3 years, and, you know, things really weren't working out real well for Coach. And then he got let go. And, you know, that's the nature of the beast in college football at any level. When the head man gets let go, everybody else is getting it too. But fortunate enough, with Coach Connor, the head coach at North Central College, was a nationally renowned speaker on the Delaware Wing Tee, which is almost an offense that's non-existent anymore. You see some wing tee around here, but even, you know, people like Coach Aldo, who I just saw at a clinic a couple months ago, you know, those wing tee guys around here, they'll tell you that that whole Delaware wing tee is a completely different animal. And Coach was still speaking around the country at the Frank Glazier clinics, and you know, appreciative to him that everywhere he would go, whether it be Atlanta or Dallas, Texas, when he'd start off or end his talks, he'd say, "Hey, I've got a young wing tee offensive line coach. Is anybody interested? Has a position?" And I got two calls, one from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and one from Kennesaw, Georgia. And interviewed over the phone for the Baton Rouge one, and drove down to Kennesaw and took the job at Harrison High School in Kennesaw, Georgia. And it was, you know, it was one of the best 4 years of our lives. You know, at the time, our family was just my wife, Monica, and I. And it was a great experience and a wonderful opportunity that we had there.
So that area of Georgia, like, what was enrollment of the high school then? And I remember you told me one of the stories. Did you coach Corey Patterson or coach mm-hmm. against him, the great Cub center?
When we went there, Harrison was a brand new school. When we went, it was in its third year of existence, and it was like, I want to say 1,500 to 1,700 kids. And by the time we left in the spring of 97, the enrollment was 3,500 kids. It was the largest school in the state of Georgia at the time. And, yeah, Corey Patterson, who was the number one draft pick for the Cubs, and like the second or third pick overall in 98, he was a running back and wide receiver for us. I left going into his senior year, and he didn't play football his senior year after I left, nothing to do with me not being there. But obviously, I mean, he pretty much knew that he was going to be a a number one draft pick.
He could have played at the next level, though, in football.
When he was going into his junior year, yeah, like at that time, I mean, and they're back to being that way, but at that time Florida State was at the top of the heap in college football, and you know, they had offered him going into his junior year to play defensive back. So it was an unbelievable experience with the type of kids that we were able to coach, and especially the ones we were also the ones we coached against. I mean, we had, I think out of that last team, we had three kids go to the SEC.
Holy smokes.
You know, our quarterback was the Georgia Gatorade Player of the Year. He was a Parade All-American. Ended up starting at Auburn and beat number one ranked Florida at Auburn. It's on ESPN Classic every now and then. You know, got to coach against Jamal Lewis, who played in the NFL, and I'm not sure. At one time, he held the single-game rushing record in the NFL.
Wow. So what was it like having SEC coaches coming around, man? Bobby Bowden, a program.
Yeah, it was really cool. Our quarterback, Daniel Cobb, he went to UGA out of school, and Jim Donnan was the head coach at that time. And, you know, and Jim Donnan was around all the time. I mean, he was always at Harrison High School trying to get Daniel Cobb to be there. And we would take our whole team to the Georgia camp, and we were treated like royalty because they wanted Daniel Cobb. It was neat, and it was a great experience to be involved in that. And when you get kids, most college places, most college institutions, and are very open arms to high school coaches and give you a lot of access. But when you have kids like that, I mean, you know, I tell the coaches around here, I still to this day think it's one of the funniest moments I've ever been in. We were at Auburn, and Daniel was at Auburn now, and I was actually at Galesburg and would fly down at spring break. And my old boss says, "I'm going to Auburn today. You want to go?" I'm like, "Sure." So we go, and we sit in their meetings and listen to all their – I was in the quarterback meeting, and they said, "Well, just go in the coach's lounge and wait until practice starts." So Coach and I are sitting in there watching TV in this nice area, and here comes Tommy Tuberville walks in. And literally 15 minutes before practice is going to start, lays down on the couch, pops open a bag of Cheetos, and looks at me and goes, "Want a Cheeto, Brian?" Like, I'm sitting here with Tommy Tuberville, and he's offering me Cheetos 15 minutes before practice. Now, I mean, those guys that you see every week on Saturdays, and I mean, they're just normal guys too. You know, they just have good situations where they're in the public spotlight.
Well, and I'm wondering though, from your perspective, a kid that grew up in, you know, went to a small school at Westmoor, so you basically your secondary education experiences, you know, you go from Westmoor, then you go to North Central, of course, and then coach a little bit at the college level, and then go to a school of 3,500 kids. You know, there ain't 3,500 kids that are 3,500 people that lived in the Westmoor school district total. So what was that culture shock like in adjusting to all that?
Well, going there was a little easier because I spent 7 years in Naperville. You know, so I'd lived in the Chicagoland area. And, you know, so that wasn't that big of adjustment. The thing about Harrison High School was the makeup of it was it was a unique makeup. I mean, they were a country club community, you know, and it's 30 miles north of Atlanta. The very white collar, and there was a high expectation of the parents of their kids. I mean, there wasn't an issue of, you know, you're going to do, you know, my son's not going to do this, going to do that. If that's what the program's doing, they're going to do it. And, you know, it was still kind of a rural setting. My boss was from Scotch Plains, New Jersey. He came down there from New Jersey, and he would always talk about how, you know, we're out in the sticks. How can you do you like living in the sticks? I'm like, man,
you ain't seen nothing yet, bro.
I said where I came from, where I grew up, we were 35 miles from any town over 3,000 people. I said, this is the sticks. So it was, you know, it wasn't that big of an adjustment. You know, it was, like I said, a brand new school, great principal. So the school ran really smooth. I mean, it didn't seem... I knew more kids at that school, 34,000 people, than I knew at Galesburg, which was 14.
Yeah.
Or 3,400. Then it was at 1,400. I don't really know why that it was that way, and part of it just might be the culture of the South.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a big adjustment.
So you leave from Georgia then, and you're a young age to get a head coaching job at a... What's Galesburg, 6A or 7A school now in football? What, at 28 you mm-hmm. coached? So what about that experience coaching in the Western Big Six? And like I said, the age, but you had a lot of experience, I guess, with the different stops you've made, there's no question about. But what about taking on a job and coaching in the Western Big Six at that age?
Well, I think, and I'm now one of the old guys.
And that was your first head coaching job, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate in Georgia to be given a lot of responsibility. I was the offensive coordinator there, and coach he let me run the show offensively, and he gave me a lot of leadership in the off-season strength and conditioning program. I mean, he had his program, but I had most of the, really all the kids in class, and then in before school. So, but like you find as the older you get, I was no different probably than a lot of the 25, 26, 27 year olds that have worked with me and under me since that point. Is you had all the answers, I think I had a pretty, pretty solid background, pretty good resume going into it. Could I have used a couple more years before taking that step? Probably. But in Galesburg, we looked at it as a situation. It was an opportunity to come closer to home. A nice size school. And there was nowhere to go but up at the time. I mean, they had won one game in 3 years. Hadn't won a game in the Big Six in 3 years, so I wasn't coming into a situation where you were expected to be in the second or third round of the playoffs every year, and there was a lot of work to be done, and we worked really hard at it, and got some good young coaches on board that did a good job for us. I mean, we had an Aledo kid, Matt Langenfelter, was working for us at the freshman level. Toby Vallis, the head coach at Farmington, was one of my assistants. We had a lot. Andy Edmondson, who's the now the principal at the Evil Sterling Newman now.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
He's been the principal at Sterling Newman now. He was there when we lost to him in the semis. So we had a lot of good young coaches, and anytime I think there's things you do differently, but. I think without question, I mean, that program was better top to bottom from every aspect, as far as the cloth they wore in games to the pads they wore to the expectations of the kids and the community of what needed to be done to be successful. And, the time the opportunity came to come here to Aledo, and it was too good to pass up, and we had a good group coming back, Zach Shea, an alum of Galesburg, took over after me, and he went 5-4 and got him in the first round of the playoffs, which that was great, and I was proud of that, and talked to Coach Shea about that during the season, that it was really good that to see those kids have that success, and I know to this day he's very proud of doing that at his alma mater.
So you were there 4 years or five, how many years?
I was Galesburg 5 years. Yep.
So when you look back at that era of the Western Big Six, we were talking in the front office, you had Tracy was coaching at UT then, mm-hmm. right? A guy like him, Vic Boblett, who had such a great run coaching. So you got the, and Dan McGuire, I think, was at Moline. So you kind of got that experience of coaching against those type of people who had been in it for a while. So what was that like?
It was really good. And I will say, from the standpoint of Mike Tracy, and you and I have talked about, we've discussed it a little bit, and I know Mike, you had interviewed him a couple summers ago, and he had mentioned me in your interview. Mm-hmm. Mike was the type of guy that I mean, obviously, he wants to win. He wants his football program to be successful. But he's just a genuine good person. And you could, right away from the first Western Big Six coaching meeting we had, Mike was always that guy that would go out of his way to, how you doing, anytime, it's still to the, when I see Mike, there's always some words of wisdom from him of some aspect. And a person who didn't get, I never got the respect that he deserved, was Dan McGuire at Moline. You can look back at those years when Dan McGuire was at Moline, and they were 8-1, 9-0 every year. They were going to beat Rocky or lose to Rocky. Yeah. And they would complain how boring it was. I mean, he was double tight, full house, but they always called them the plow boys. When Moline took the field, the field tipped to their side because they were gigantic. And they had a style of football they were going to play, and they were very successful with it. And they were, at that time, a six-class system. They're going to be 9-0. Then they played Downer South at 6-3 in the first round, and that's an uphill battle. They haven't had quite the consistency and success since Dan, but he's the principal at Moline now, he worked for Mike. He was an assistant for Mike Tracy at Alleman. So he was the same type of character guy that Mike was. I mean, he was always there to help out a young guy and give you words of encouragement when things weren't going great. So it was a good experience.
So you leave Galesburg and then you come to Aledo as AD, but it was a couple years before you got back into coaching football then. So when you came to Aledo, how difficult was it not to be involved in basically coaching football, which you had done basically, after your college playing days to Galesburg? So what was that like, having to give that up I can't remember how many years it was you had to give up coaching football.
Well, I came in 2002, the fall of 2002, and I started coaching again in 2007.
So it was a five-year layoff?
Yeah.
So, was it just time in your career where you said, maybe I need to step out so I don't become a complete crazy person? Was that type of that? Or you wanted to just kind of be an AD?
It was exactly that. Because you put a lot of time, effort, and energy into any football program, even as an assistant, but as a head coach, the amount of time, effort, and energy that is involved in it, until you've done it, you really don't know what goes into it. And it was just time. I mean, it was time to just get away from it for a while. It was the first time since I was in high school. I went on a vacation the second week of August, went to Yellowstone National Park and and you find out that, during the season, normally when you leave home, it's dark. And then when you get home, it's dark. And that's what Tom Schmolbach, who was at Augustana for years, he told me, he said, you're going to find out that the leaves change colors in the fall. He said they don't go from green to the trees being bare. Yeah. There's this period of time where they turn red and brown, and it's really beautiful. And so I enjoyed that, and it was good. I had never been an athletic director, and wasn't a situation where we came in here where there was an athletic director that was in a different position in the district that was still there. I mean, I walked in June, and here's all this stuff, and I just kind of sat down and figured it out. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. So that's a big undertaking, and it kept me occupied, that's for sure. And I didn't have idle time where I was, looking for things to do. And then it got to that Coach Walter had some turnover in his staff, and he had talked to me about it a little bit in 2006 of wanting, asking if I would do it. And we would talk a lot of football on a day-to-day basis anyway. And just didn't, 06 didn't, just wasn't the right time. And then in 07, we, and the administration at the high school was supportive in the district of letting me coach also.
And be AD.
Yeah, and do both. You know, and you know, when I came, that really wasn't an option. That's not something they wanted to do. So, and it was the right time, and then, you know, good experience.
Yeah. So you with Coach Welter, with Coach Zunkel, and now with Coach Hofer. Mm-hmm. So you know, you've been around for three different staffs, and you know, the kind of give and take as being an assistant with, you know, three different head coaches. You know, people don't realize there's a lot of different, like I said, give and take or whatever, you know, different philosophies. So you've kind of had to deal with that. But that's the one thing about being an assistant that you probably understand from your time as a head coach. It's like, hey, if this is what the program wants to do, this is what we're going to do then.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what, I mean, I think the program, at least since I've been here, the good programs have the good assistants. And I mean that with the utmost respect for what Aledo and Mercer County has done over the years in football, and I think the head coaches would be the first to tell you that. So I think that's a big part of these successful programs. You have to have the loyal assistant, and the loyal assistant has to understand that it's not my program.
Mm-hmm.
How tough was that for you initially when you got back into coaching to say, well, I'm an assistant now, I'm not making the final decision? And you even said when you look back to Galesburg, hey, maybe I need a couple more years seasoning. Did you need seasoning as an assistant coach, if you kind of understand what I'm saying? When you're sitting there, it's like, why isn't he doing this? Come on. And then the aha moment is, well, I'm not the head coach. So basically he's going to take my input and he's going to determine what he's going to do in the end.
Yeah. My first two jobs at North Central and at Harrison High School with those two head coaches, Coach Connor and Coach Cobley, there was never any doubt who was in charge. And there were dozens of times, especially at North Central College, where, you know, there was another full-time guy and myself, and we'd have ideas about recruiting. You know, Coach, what do you think about this? And he would listen to us, and Coach Connor's a giant dude. He's like 6'6", big, and he'd lean back in his chair, and he'd put his size 13 up on the edge of the desk, and he'd put his hand on his chin, and he'd say, until you're sitting in this chair, you don't know. And like, okay. And so, I mean, I learned early that you have to be, as an assistant, it's okay to be a devil's advocate. It's okay to throw out ideas. You may throw out 10 of them, and two of them you get to implement. And you can't have, you can't get hurt. You can't have feelings about it. You can't get hurt, your feelings hurt over it. You got to have thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, you know, one of those ideas you're going to put in will be great in practice, and then you do it in the game, and it's a train wreck. And then you got to have thick skin when you get the repercussions of that,
yeah,
either at that point in time on the sideline or on Saturday or Sunday morning when you're doing films. So the first year with Coach Welter was an easy transition, because it was literally like 2 days before practice.
Oh, was it?
He says, we don't have anybody. Come coach the running back, and do the defensive line. I'm like, okay. I don't know the name of a play. I don't know, you know. And it was learning on the fly, and,
yeah,
you know, had Matt Dawson, you know, and I just took those five or six running backs and beat them in the ground and tried to make them better. And then, you know, obviously after that, as the season went on, got a grasp of things. But, you know, as a coaching staff, if you're always in agreement on everything, you're probably not going to be very successful.
Yeah, you got to be sure. It comes down to challenging one another,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but from 3:15 to 6 o'clock Monday through Thursday, and from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock on Friday night, you all got to be in the same boat rowing in the same direction. And your disagreements happen at 7 o'clock after practice or at 7 a.m. in film rooms, and your hay shows out. But when you hit the field, everybody's in the same is on the same page.
All right, so you just made almost a P.J. Fleck reference. You're going to wear the white pants on the sideline.
Yeah, exactly.
next year. You know, and we've talked about this, too, before, and I want to get back to some of your time coaching, but, I was a child of the 80s, okay? So, and you're a big strength and conditioning guy. I get that. But, like, I don't know if you call it technology or what, but how, you know, like, technology, like electronic technology changes. Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about, like, strength and conditioning, like, how that training has changed from, like, because I think, like, in the 80s, in our era, is when there was the first kind of serious push for strength and conditioning at the high school level. But I remember still at the time, taking salt, you know, hey, you need salt tablets.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, what if you do that now? That's the absolute worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
But, you know, you look, there's a lot of guys back in the 80s that, yeah, take salt tablets on those hot days. It's like, for what? And then I can't remember what story. I think it was you telling me about when you guys used to practice over in Joy at Westmore, some of the water stops or water stops you would take during practice and things of that nature and the type of water you would drink. I mean, just like the culture has changed so much in strength and conditioning, and you lived it firsthand being a child in the 80s of going through it, and now how you see how much it's changed here in 2016, 2017.
Didn't matter, basketball practice, but football especially. We didn't have the practice field they have down in Joy now. I mean, there were cornfields right up to the Ag building. We practiced on the game field. And so you'd go out there and practice, and this is the true story also. At halftime, they would come out, the Joy fire truck, and water down the field to settle the dust because there'd be no grass on it because you practiced on it. They'd pee on it. And Mick Locke will agree. It happened. The firemen's down the front, and they'd sprinkle it down to settle the dust. So you come off after practice and come down the locker room, and right on the door outside was a salt tablet dispenser. You turn the bottom, and like five of them would fall out. And then on special occasions, they'd have a big Kramer tub of dextrose tablets. They're just salt, or sugar, just sugar pills. And, the water story, and the young coaches here, you know, you tell them those, story about the salt tablets. Like, you're kidding me. It's like, oh, no, we'd eat 10, 15 of them.
Yeah, all kids in the 80s remember that, man.
Yeah, that's part. Yeah, that might be one of the reasons why I have blood pressure issues now. Yeah. But, and then the water, you didn't have water. If it was super hot, we did two things. Coach would stand there by the Ag building with a garden hose, and the entire team would line up in a line, and he'd be running.
Hope he hits me with it.
And he'd just hold it out, and you'd walk up, and he'd go, one, two, three, next, and you'd move on. And we would have kids that would have, like, heat exhaustion or heat stroke. And they wouldn't have heat stroke, but he'd lay them on the incline driving up, like you're going in the Ag building. So their head was, their feet were elevated. And he would put the hose down their shoulder pads, and they'd just lay there while we practiced. And
it's like a ride at Wacky Waters.
Yeah. And then we'd have two-a-days, and between two-a-days, there'd be like an hour break. Maybe that was a break. We went away from two-a-days and had a break in the middle, and Coach would go get coolers of ice. Shaved ice from the fish market in New Boston. And you'd sit in the shade and you'd go to the cooler and get all this shaved ice and put it in your helmet. And then you'd sit there and eat ice chips and that tasted and smelled like fish. And then as the ice would melt, you'd hold the helmet up and drink the water draining out of the air holes. You know, that was what, you think that stuff that, like my old throws coach in college used to say, you don't need water. I used to suck on my neck of my jersey for moisture. But that was, this was 1985. Yeah. You know, it wasn't.
So you're like, hey, coach, man, there's a thing I heard. It's called Gatorade. Can I have one? They're like, no, fish water from the fish market.
Yep.
Well, so, and you were telling a story, too, off the air about when you played your senior year at Westmoor. And I didn't realize this. You said you were the second leading scorer. It took your team until week 9, you said, to score. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. We were scoreless until week 9. And my buddy scored a touchdown, and I tackled a kid from Orion in the end zone for a safety. So it was, like I told you before we got on, you look back at that, it's amazing that I chose to go on and play college football and make basically my career coaching football, because, I mean, it was fun. I mean, you know.
But I mean, when you, from a, can you take anything from your playing days at high school from, in terms of maybe not having success, at least in terms of wins and losses, and then, like, applying that when you're still coaching today? Are there lessons to be learned from those type of experiences?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a perseverance thing. I mean, of being, when in some programs and at, to some degree here, they're not necessarily playing because it's fun and they love playing. They are playing because maybe they think they're supposed to.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our program here, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of pressure on those kids on a day-to-day basis. Number one, they don't want to be the ones that end a playoff streak. You know, that was never anything that ever crossed our mind, was making the playoffs. And here, the thing that crosses their mind on a daily basis is we can't not make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier to play on a winning program and a winning team, but I think that, and sometimes is when you have conversations like this, like we're having right now, you have to look back at those days and put it back into perspective that as coaches, sometimes right now, you don't enjoy the wins as much as you should. And whether, and you were on the sideline for a couple of years for us, you have an exciting 2-day comeback win against Mid-County. And, you know, you're ecstatic when it happens. And then you get to the locker room, you get on the bus and go, how did we only win that game by that? Why, you know? And that's what you've got to be careful with. You know, you can't, no matter how you win it, you've got to appreciate and enjoy the fact that you won the game. And mm-hmm. that's, you know, Herm Edwards, you play to win the game. That, you know, and that's why you do it. I mean, that's not the main reason why you do it, but that's why you do everything else, is to come out on top at the end. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that you take from years of frustration and not being successful is, you know, you got to be realistic and look back a few decades and say, you know, you didn't win a whole lot of games for a long time. Mm-hmm. So appreciate them when you do.
All right. Talking with Brian Dennison this morning, of course, a coach in the Mercer County School District. We'll take a break. Much more coming up on WMJ, WMJ.com.